Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we are so delighted now to have Hillary and Chelsea Clinton joining us. They have a new book together called The Book of Gutsy Women, Favorite Stories of Courage and Resilience. And of course, we'll talk about the news of the day. You know about Hillary Rodham Clinton's career. Chelsea Clinton is an adjunct professor at the School of Public Health at Columbia University and a champion for women and girls through her advocacy, writing, and work at the Clinton Foundation. So Secretary Clinton, welcome back. And Ms. Clinton, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Brian. It's great to be talking to you again.
And it's the Book of Gutsy Women, but Secretary Clinton, I actually want to start by asking you about a gutsy man. Would you like to say anything about the sudden passing this morning of Congressman Elijah Cummings?
Oh, I would. I was just devastated to learn about Elijah's passing. You know, Brian, he was such a fierce champion for truth and justice and kindness. In every part of his life, he was someone who stood up and was willing to take a stand. The role that he has played over the last several years in trying to push back against the abuses of power coming from the Trump administration have really been a textbook case in how to take on someone who denies the rights of Congress to ask questions and, frankly, undermines the rule of law and our institutions. So he will be dearly missed by anybody who followed his career and understands what an important role he played in our country.
One item in all the obits today is how Congressman Cummings was the lead Democrat on the Benghazi committee and raised the question in the midst of all that in 2015, and we played the clip earlier, of whether the very existence of the committee was a taxpayer-funded effort to derail your candidacy. Would you say anything about his role in that context?
Well, I think he was right. And in fact, he was supported in that position by the Republican leader, Kevin McCarthy, who, after there had been, seven investigations, most led by Republicans in the House and the Senate, they decided to form this select committee. And McCarthy basically said, look, you know, her poll numbers were high and look at what we did to her. So Elijah understood that this was a political partisan effort. And again, he was fierce in his, antagonism toward the efforts to, really undermine previous independent investigations. And I was, very grateful to him because he was taking the lead against the Republican attacks.
Chelsea, I see the first words in the book are the story of some thousand-year-old remains found at a women's monastery in Germany. Would you tell our listeners that story and the significance of it?
Sure. One of the reasons we wanted to start the book kind of with that specific story, Brian, is because it actually came from an article that both my mom and I had read on CNN.com and had sent each other. And it just kind of felt so emblematic of how many of these stories kind of have been exchanged kind of throughout our lives with one another and kind of with my grandmothers and our family, our friends. But this story, I think, struck such a chord with us because, archaeologists found a woman's skeleton, more than 1,000 years old, just before 1,000 AD, they think. And she had stained blue teeth, which they were able to discern was from lapis lazuli. And that her teeth were stained blue because clearly she'd been an illustrator, an artist, and she would have dipped kind of the brush in the lapis lazuli paint, and when it would get too dry, she would have to wet the brush kind of in her mouth and then dip it back in the paint. And at the time, that was the most kind of precious, prized, kind of vibrant shade of blue, and it was used only by the most esteemed artists. And clearly this woman then would have been kind of in the ranks of the most respected artists in this kind of in this religious community. And that just resonated with us because so often, like, we don't hear the stories of women that have been great artists or the contributions of kind of women in any field kind of throughout history. And yet, of course, we've always been there. And we wrote the Book of Gutsy Women partly to share the stories that have meant so much to us, but also partly to share the stories that we think any reader, and particularly young readers, kind of should grow up knowing.
And Secretary Clinton, how about the cover photo? Women firefighters in training at Pearl Harbor in 1941?
Yes. When we saw that photo, again, we just had this mutual exclamation, like, oh my gosh, here is a photo of, as you can tell on the cover, a diverse group of women who were training to be firefighters at Pearl Harbor. They were training before the attack on Pearl Harbor, and it just struck both Chelsea and me as a perfect image to put on the cover of the book of Gutsy Women, because, of course, the women in the book often are well-known, maybe not as well-known as we would like them to be, but we want everyone to think about the gutsy women in their lives and how we all can be gutsier.
Secretary Clinton, we mentioned briefly the Elijah Cummings moment in the context of the Benghazi Committee. You testified personally before the Benghazi Committee for 11 hours when your actions were a central subject of the inquiry. Now Congress has Giuliani and others refusing to testify at all about Ukraine or even hand over subpoenaed documents. What would you like to see Trump officials do that's consistent, perhaps, with the standard that you set?
Well, I think that they should respect the right of Congress to conduct an impeachment investigation and comply with what are lawful and constitutional due process subpoenas. And it is important that everybody understand that one of the articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon was contempt of Congress for refusal to turn over materials and to testify. So it's a real regrettable situation when people who know better, like Rudy Giuliani, are putting his personal interests, the interests of his client, Donald Trump, over the interests of our country and the rights of the Congress to enforce their subpoenas. So, Brian, I thought that the whole Benghazi hearing was a charade. I thought it was obviously intended, as I said earlier, to hurt me politically, which sadly I think it did. I knew that they would find nothing, and then they produced many hundreds of pages concluding just that, there was no there. It was a terrible tragedy, and we had to learn from it, as we had in previous occurrences like that. But I complied. And I complied because, number one, I had nothing to hide, and I knew that. And number two, because I respected the right of the Congress, no matter how partisan, in my view at that time, to conduct oversight and investigations. So I would hope that this behavior by Giuliani and others to basically reject the separation of powers and the rule of law in the pursuit of what is an absolutely constitutional investigation will result in some accountability. I'm not going to prejudge what the Congress will decide to do, but I don't think we can permit people to basically ignore lawful orders without going even further downward in what this administration is doing to undermine the rule of law.
My guests are Chelsea and Hillary Rodham Clinton. Together, they have a book, called The Book of Gutsy Women, Favorite Stories of Courage and Resilience. Our phone number is 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. The book is divided into chapters, including early inspirations, education pioneers, explorers, and inventors, advocates and activists, athletes as a chapter, and more. Chelsea, want to take one from maybe advocates and activists?
Sure. I actually thought, given the conversation you were just having that I was lucky enough to hear the end of, where you rightly, I think, Brian, praised having childcare at the event tonight in Brooklyn, that you were going to maybe go down
I'm glad you heard that route. Okay.
I just think now every event should have childcare, and that should be the expected standard. You know, one of the reasons we wanted to have, you know, groupings, Brian, is because it is often how kind of we would find one story and then that would lead to others. And although kind of you asked about activists and advocates, one of the challenges we had, though, was for some of these women, they could have gone in kind of any or every category. And something I'm going to talk about is in healers, but I really think could have been an activist and advocate, mm-hmm. which really are the vaccinators, because we're in flu season right now. Mm-hmm. And that means we're also in kind of flu vaccine season. And my daughter and I went to get our flu vaccines together last week, and I'm going to take my son to get his when I get off the phone with you and pick him up from school in a little bit. And the reason I think kind of the vaccinators deserve to be an advocate and activist is because we're living in this kind of anti-science, science denialism, anti-vax, you know, kind of vaccine denialism moment. And we have millions of kids in our country who are not fully vaccinated. And while kind of measles has gotten a lot of attention, like, you know, we also have unprecedented numbers of kids getting kind of sick with the flu in kind of modern times because parents aren't getting their kids vaccinated. And the women often who are standing on the front lines of ensuring parents understand why it's important to vaccinate their own kids, but also to vaccinate their kids to help protect those who are sick or infants who are too young to be vaccinated, are often, I think, really the unsung heroes of our moment. And I just want to give a shout out and a great appreciation to kind of all of the, you know, doctors, nurses, public health professionals who are doing that work every day, because I think they are kind of the activists and advocates for vaccination and science that we desperately need right now.
Spoken like a true adjunct professor at one of my alma maters, the School of Public Health at Columbia. Chelsea, is that where you see your professional direction? I know it's in the news right now that it was rumored or whatever it was, floated, and then you said yesterday, if I have this correctly, that you're not going to run for Nita Lowey's congressional seat in Westchester now that she's retiring. So how do you see your career at this point?
Well, I'm so grateful for the work that I get to do at the Clinton Foundation, and particularly our work kind of in public health, you know, here in the U.S. and also around the world. And I love teaching, Brian. I love the questions that my students ask and learning from them and with them. And right now I'm just having so much fun kind of on this book tour with my mom. So I'm hugely grateful for the kind of life that I am kind of lucky enough to lead and the work that I get to do across the foundation and teaching and writing. But yes, absolutely. Kind of my heart very much exists in the public health space.
And are you ruling out that congressional run for next year?
Oh, yes. It's nothing that I'm considering now.
Anne in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hello, Anne.
Hi. First of all, to Hillary Rodham Clinton, who I should be calling President Clinton, I just can't thank you enough for everything. I mean, and I can't apologize enough for everything you've been put through. If I went on and on, Brian would just have to cut me off. So I'll move on to my questions. I have a smaller one and a larger one. The smaller one is, there was an exchange between Elizabeth Warren and Pete Buttigieg about health care and Medicare for all, and I thought that you, as an obvious expert in this field, could perhaps sort of come down on who's right, who's wrong, what are the things that we're not talking about. But my bigger question is my concern about Democrats sort of eating their own and not planning for the future. And I have a fear that, yeah, Trump may be forced to not run again, and we will have Pence. And I don't think the Democrats have anything really in place to win the White House mm-hmm. and the Senate, mm-hmm. which, as you know, is critical. And I'm hoping you could sort of answer the small and the big questions, but thank you again for everything.
Thank you for your call, Anne. Secretary Clinton.
Oh, Anne. Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, you know, first, as to health care, as you can tell from what Chelsea just said, she and I are passionate. She, of course, has a doctorate in public health and has a lot more in-depth information and understands the research and has also, as she pointed out, been working with the Clinton Foundation on a whole range of public health issues, from obesity in kids here in the United States to HIV/AIDS around the world. So we care about this. And I think it's great to have a robust debate because that's who we are as Democrats. We want to put ideas out there. We want to have them tested. We want to have, you know, people ask the hard questions so that they can make up their minds. I think it's important to hold any candidate who says anything about public health to a high standard so that we can understand what it is they are advocating. And there are lots and lots of questions. You know, I've been trying to help move our country toward universal health care for more than 25 years, and I know how hard this is. I was thrilled when the Congress under Nancy Pelosi sent the bill known as the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare to President Obama to sign. And it was such a hard-fought victory and really difficult politically. And as I said in 2016, we are now at 90% of coverage. We have to do something about costs. We have to get the costs of health care down, the premiums, the deductibles, prescription drugs, everything that really adds up to a huge burden on so many Americans. But we should be looking at how we fill the gap between 90% coverage to 100% coverage. And we should be looking at how we lower the age for Medicare. We should get more people 55 and over into Medicare. We should be looking at a public option, because I know how difficult it is, not just because of the politics, but because of personal concerns that Americans have. There's nothing more personal than your health care. And are you going to keep what you like? Are you going to be able to be secure in what you have? So I think the exchange and the debate is really an important point in the Democratic nominating process, and it needs to go on because people need to answer the questions that are on everybody's mind.
Secretary
the second
Clinton,
point about...
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You can answer her second point. I apologize.
Okay. I just wanted to answer Ann's second point. Look, we have a structural deficiency in electing Democrats to any office in tough contests, whether it be congressional or gubernatorial or especially presidential, because the right and the Republican Party have such a head start on building structures that support their candidates. You know, when I got the nomination in 2016, I inherited a bankrupt Democratic National Committee. Donald Trump inherited a well-oiled Republican National Committee machine that already had a first-rate digital operation, had already sent out and opened offices in states like Florida, where they had 21 offices that they were funding and so forth. So I am of the mind that we've got to not only select our nominee, we've got to do more to support that nominee if we're going to be competitive. And I think it's going to be a very tough race because I hope that there are some Republicans in the Senate who put country before party if they are going to hold a hearing or a trial about an impeachment, if it happens coming from the House. But I'm doubtful, and I think we will still be facing Donald Trump under current circumstances, although just I'll quickly add that I was on the impeachment inquiry staff when I was a young lawyer against Nixon, and Republicans in the House voted for the articles of impeachment, which is what prompted Nixon to resign, because he knew when he lost Republicans in the House, he was not going to survive. And I don't know if that will happen this time. I would hope that people will look at the facts and the evidence and do what's best for the country.
Well, if the House is going to impeach Trump over Ukraine, and I guess especially if they have any chance at all of convincing Republicans in the Senate to go along on removal, they will keep arguing, as some have already done, that this wasn't just corruption of U.S. foreign policy for Trump's personal political gain. It was a national security risk to the United States. So as a former Secretary of State, could you make that case?
Yes, and I feel that very strongly, Brian. And that combined with his impulsive withdrawal of American troops after a phone call with President Erdogan of Turkey, leaving our allies, the Kurds, at the mercy not only of the Turkish military, but of the militias that the Turks have deployed in northern Syria. You take the combination of those two things. We are slowly but steadily, under this president's leadership, losing any kind of leverage or credibility in foreign policy. And we are doing so much to embolden our adversaries, whether they be Putin or Iran or the unfortunate back and forth with China. We argue about trade while they keep, you know, building military bases in the South China Sea and into Europe.
Let me jump in for time's sake. It's one thing to say that Trump is running foreign policy very badly. It's another thing to say that there's an impeachable offense tied to Ukraine. Are you saying that with respect to national security?
Yes, I am. And here's why, very briefly. You know, when our founders put impeachment in the Constitution, one of their biggest fears was a president who would do the bidding and seek favor with foreign governments. Who does this help in Ukraine besides Trump's efforts to maneuver and manufacture a scandal to help his election prospects? Well, of course, it helps Russia. It helps Putin. As you know, Nancy Pelosi said in that memorable meeting at the White House yesterday, with President Trump, all roads lead to Putin. This could not be a clearer example of undermining our national security and interests, the kind that the founders were most worried about. And I think that's why it's broken through, Brian. I think that, you know, the emoluments and the obstruction of justice, all of that was kind of caught up in a, you know, back and forth about whether or not it could be considered impeachable. But when the American public, and including now even some Republicans who are expressing their concerns, and certainly members of his administration who are coming forward to testify, when it comes to a clear example of undermining national security for personal political gain and advantaging Vladimir Putin, who wants to basically control Ukraine at the expense of both American and European interests, there is no doubt in my mind that undermines national security. But then, of course, you can add on other things that are not the subject of the impeachment investigation, like this impulsive behavior with the Kurds, which certainly advantages Iran and Russia once again.
Honey in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Hillary Rodham and Chelsea Clinton. Hello, Honey.
Hi, thank you for getting me through the call. I thought I was going to be banned for my questions. I would like to ask Hillary Clinton about her involvement in Honduras with the hydroelectric problem, I mean hydroelectric plants that are providing electricity to, you know, nationally and internationally. Nonetheless, the same, I mean, the Honduran people themselves cannot afford to pay their electrical bills, and they have, therefore have shortages. It's a chaos because it's a chaos just in that regard. But Hillary Clinton was mentioned by an activist that was killed because she was obviously fighting the corporations, the international corporations coming from different parts of the world, I mean, meaning Europe, and Hillary Clinton had hands on it. And I would like to ask her what her involvement is, where she regrets to have given green light as well to the ousting of Zelaya, who just wanted to who was looking out for the Honduran population, and therefore, you know, therefore he was ousted. Clinton, Hillary, was fully engaged on that.
And Honey, we have 2 minutes in the show, so I'm going to have to leave it there. But Secretary Clinton, this topic comes up from people following Honduras that at the time that you were Secretary of State, you enabled a change of government there that was not in the public interest. And we're seeing the results of that, among many other things, to this day in the refugee crisis.
Well, first, let me say I know nothing about and had no involvement in any kind of international corporation hydroelectric plan, so I don't know what the gentleman is talking about. With respect to American policy during the Obama administration regarding Honduras, we tried always to support whatever the legal and constitutional actions of Honduras were, at the same time pushing Honduras very hard to clean up its act, to end corruption, to provide better and stronger institutions to protect the Honduran people. And we were very, very committed to doing what we could in Central America to try to stabilize the society, to provide more economic opportunity, to help the government take on the gangs and try to abate the violence. So I think the Obama administration was on the right track in trying to help the people in Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala get better government, get better institutions, get better security, get better economic opportunity. And it's really a shame that the Trump administration has cut off all aid to those three countries just when they need it the most.
Hey, Chelsea, you get the last word here in about our last minute. How has your mom been an inspiration to you?
Oh, Brian, that's going to take a lot more than our vanishing seconds. You know, my mom is an inspiration to me because she just never quits. She just always keeps going and always kind of stands up for what she believes is right. But she's also an inspiration to me as a mom. I mean, when I was growing up, I never doubted I was the single most important person and part of her life. And so particularly now as a mom, you know, I feel that inspiration so keenly because that's how I want my kids to always see me. I want them to be proud of me out in the world, but I want them to always, always know they're the most important part of my life.
Hillary Rodham Clinton and Chelsea Clinton are now the co-authors of the Book of Gutsy Women, Favorite Stories of Courage and Resilience. Thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Brian. Great to talk to you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.